on your part.
All right. Here we go. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm JT Ayers, your host. So glad you're here. And happy holidays to you. You know what? I don't know when you're listening to this podcast. In fact, the guests I have, you're probably going to come on this podcast multiple times and you're going to go back and see that we did it and you're going to want to listen to it again. But I need to talk about On Track and Field. Listen, during this time, high jump and pole vault landing systems, they're amazing. They just started developing these things and they have humongous pole vault pits. I just bought for my track team a high jump pit. It's humongous. It's custom made and it was affordable and cheap, which is it's nuts if you're in the track and field world. And I just bought their invitational pit. This thing's 26 by 8, 21, 6, and 32. It's humongous and it's $10,000 less than it should be. So I just bought that. You're going to want to go to ontrackandfield.com and check it out or call them at 800-697-2999. I'll say it one more time. Ready? 1-800-697-2999. That's On Track and Field. Go check out those pole vault and high jump landing systems. With me today is Coach Doug Soles, a friend of mine when he was in California. But now he's not in California. He left like everybody else leaves California. But regardless, Great Oak track and field head coach, as well as cross country from 2004 to 2020. He's now at Harriman Track and Field and Cross Country in Utah. And this is his 24th year coaching. His boys just, and I'm going to say it, they said it. He probably doesn't believe it. They threw up the upset. They had an upset at Nike Cross Nationals Championship. His boys did it. They won it. It was pretty amazing. He's also the author of a book called Building Championship Cross Country Programs. You can find it on Amazon. And when he was here in California, in arguably the greatest track and field and cross country state in America, he might disagree now that he's in Utah, but they won 14 California D1 state titles, 8 with the girls, 6 with the boys. Coach, it's so good to have you on the podcast, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Well, we have to talk about this last season. I mean, there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but first and foremost, all right, you got your 7 boys sitting in the room. How do you cast a vision about actually winning the national championship?
Well, you know, it goes back to the summer. We had a really good track season and we were coming into the summer. We felt like, you know, we pretty much have the best team in the country. And we had the team to measure ourselves with because American Fork returned 6 of 7. They had the fastest guy in the nation. And it was like, okay, if we can run with American Fork, we can run with anyone. And we felt like we made the jumps over the summer to pretty much be the best team. And so we felt pretty confident that this is going to be something we can do. And, you know, we faced off against them in August at the Timpanogos invite, ended up pretty much being a tie, but we got the tiebreaker. So we barely squeaked by them there. And then as the season went on, we beat them a couple more times and they beat us at state, beat us at NXR. But at NXR, we started off, they were supposed to come by the mile at about 35th place and they ended up coming by like 100th. So, you know, my top guy closed 82 places, my second guy closed 79. So we felt like the fitness was there. We had the ability to do what we needed to do. We just didn't perform in the previous, you know, couple races at the level we wanted to. So we just really tried to dial it in and we figured our juniors were going to play a little bit more significant role. One of the coolest things as a coach is to watch boys become men right in front of your eyes. It's like, you know, we can take second or third if you guys are boys and we can be national champions if you guys decide to be men tomorrow. And to watch them go out there and be like, no, I'm a man and handle their business. You know, Jonah Tang was up like in the top 35 the whole way, you know, a place that, you know, statistically he wouldn't have been probably projected to be was super exciting.
Well, that's the hard thing about cross country, no matter where you coach, high school, you know, NCAA, it doesn't matter. You have to get 5, maybe even 7 to all do the right thing at the right time together. And I mean, it's very individual, but yet it's also very team. You've done this for years, Doug. You've done such a good job. What's the secret? How do you get young athletes to compete together all well, not one of them doing not what they should do? And I mean, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the skills of being a cross-country coach because there's no timeouts. You know, we don't get to stop the race and say, hey, I'd like you to be a little bit further up. You know, you've got to make sure that they're kind of programmed ahead of time. This is what we need to accomplish. And this is where you need to be. So everybody has to have a pretty good idea of what their job is and what they're trying to accomplish. And so that's one of the things that I've spent a lot of time on is really the mind of the athletes. And, you know, we didn't run at State the way that I wanted them to and the way that they said they were going to run. And so I lit them up pretty good at State, and it's not something I do very often, but I needed to wake them up that, you know, this is the only team that can beat you guys. And if you don't get your brains right, you know, you're not going to be the national champions. We went through the whole season believing we were going to be national champions. So just trying to make sure that they were programmed to believe in themselves that they could do it. And so that's why when we got to NXR, I think everybody was kind of like, oh yeah, American Forks got their number. But, you know, in the back of our minds, it's like, well, had we gone out a little bit faster, we'd have been right there with no problem. So it wasn't a fitness issue. It was more of a mistake, just, you know, comfort mistake. They went out a little too comfortable and got, you know, bottlenecked in the back of the race. So as we made those adjustments, these guys all believed they could go out and do it. And, you know, I've got really good assistant coaches on Friday night. We really broke down for the kids what it takes. There's a lot of coaches that go to NXN and they're, you know, they've got great teams, but they're first year coach up there and they're going to struggle to compete against the coaches that truly understand that course and the weather changes and how the course changes with the weather. And so, you know, it's not a coincidence that the podium had Timo Mostert on there, who's been there as many as just about anybody. It had the South Lake Carroll coach, Justin Leonard. So, you know, the old timers that really know that course did the best in the mud and had their kids the most prepared. So,
well, a lot of those teams that were scoring, you know, almost most of them in the top 10 were all teams from altitude. And my poor California schools didn't do so well. And you've been in both extremes. You've been in the central, or, you know, like Temecula, which is, if you're listening, that's pretty much in the southern kind of part of California, but it's very hot, very, very hot. And it's not really high above sea level. I mean, it's not altitude training by any stretch. But now that you're where you are now and you have extremes with your seasons, what can you tell about some of those misnomers about cross country training? Does altitude help? Does running flat or over hills or different terrain? I mean, what have you learned just even over the last couple of years you've been where you are now?
Yeah, I think it helps a ton. You know, there's a lot of teams up here that have altitude that don't seem to do much with it, right? So you've got to have all the pieces together. It's like people used to say, well, you know, Great Oak has 3,500 kids, so therefore that's the only reason why you're a good coach, Doug. And it's like, well, there's a lot of other schools in California with 3,500 kids that haven't won 14 state championships. So, you know, there's advantages and disadvantages just about every area. Utah's advantage is you've got really tough kids. You know, we run in the winter and they're running in the snow and the muck and all this stuff all the way through. And so they're pretty adept at handling that kind of stuff. So I can tell you as a coach that's been on both sides of that equation, when we walked out to go on the course, our kids they're not fazed by it. They don't see it. But the California kids, it's like, I've never run on this before. I don't know how to adjust to this. So in the early years at Great Oak, we'd have these really great, highly ranked national championship level teams. And then we'd get up there and it'd be super muddy and our kids wouldn't know how to run in it. So the adjustments that I had to make while at Great Oak was I had to get them used to doing soft surface work. So, you know, the only soft surface we had was sand. So we would do, you know, soft sand runs and try to get that burn in the quad so that we could realize, okay, we can run in this and, you know, how do you adapt to that pain? And so we made those adjustments. We did, you know, what I learned is I had to do a lot of ancillary work, a lot of hit type stuff to make sure that our kids could recover a little faster and be ready to bounce back for the next portion of the course. And as we've started to master those things, we've been able to put it all together. And I think our kids were just physically a little bit more ready than most of the teams up there.
It makes a lot of sense because the course was, I mean, from what I saw, muddy, and there was a pond in the middle of it and you guys were running all over and your kids, you're saying, just weren't really fazed by that.
Yeah. I don't think there was a fear factor for us with the, you know, I thought it was warm. I was out there in shorts, you know, it was 52 degrees or whatever. That felt great for us because it's 18 degrees in the morning when we have first period cross country PE. So it felt nice and warm and we were ready for it, but you know, give us 10 degrees and slop and we'll go out there and tear it up. We're just not affected by it. So that's one of the nice things. And then the altitude, I think if you look at American Fork and you look at, you know, Riverton and you look at us this year, we're going to close that last mile a little bit better because our kids just have a little bit stronger lungs from the altitude. I think we saw that on the Colorado side as well. So, you know, there's positives and negatives to being up here. It's definitely harder to train in the winter compared to some of the stuff I could do, you know, 65 degrees and sunny in SoCal in the winter versus, you know, 18 degrees and snowing here. So it definitely limits some of the speed stuff I'd like to do for the spring, but you know, for cross country, it's pretty nice the whole way through.
Now, one thing I drove out and you and I hung out and had a lunch and you told me something that was really wise. And I think about it all the time. You said, hey, I'm not building, you know, we were talking about track and field. You're saying, I'm not trying to build the 2024 team. I'm trying to also think about 2025, 2026, and even 2027. And that was extremely great advice you gave me. And as a result, my track and field team has been good every year because we're thinking about those freshmen and placing them in areas and training them for four-year projects. Like, you're a project for 4 years. So when you think about cross country, you've been there for a very short time, which you've kind of silenced a lot of the critics, because the critics used to say things like, well, that's because you make them run when they're young and you get them ready to, when they join your high school, especially at Great Oak, they know how to run already. They already know how to do this distance. You haven't had a really a chance to do that with these athletes. So I don't know. Would you speak about maybe to the cross country coach or distance coach that's listening right now and just give them advice about what it looks like to teach someone about a sport that's not really popular, and that's cross country?
Yeah, well, it was interesting because that was one of the things I talked about with my wife was, you know, I've always said there's a national championship cross country team on almost every larger high school in America, but they're playing soccer or they're playing basketball or they're doing something else, right? So it's just a matter of getting those kids to come out. So I came, there was already a pretty good solid boys group of kids, but you know, there's certain things you've got to adjust and make sure that they're ready to perform at the highest possible level. So, you know, these are guys that were ninth and 10th graders when I took over, and they weren't particularly fast. Most of them, you know, had PRs in the 18s, 19s, 20s. So kind of standard cross-country team that you'd see just about anywhere in America for 5K. And so it was like, okay, how do we take this group of kids and get them to that high level? That's what we really focused on. We didn't have to get a massive influx of people, you know, like our top seven guys this year at NXN, those guys were all Harriman guys. You know, it wasn't like we had four or five guys transfer in and that's why we won. It was, we took what we had and we improved it, improved upon it so that they were able to get out and compete. And I think that's for cross country, that's really what you've got to look at. Like you were saying, we always try to build, you know, this year's varsity, next year's varsity, and our future varsity all at the same time. And what that does is it forces me to look at those ninth grade guys that I know will be in my varsity someday as just as important as the guys that are currently, you know, battling for an NXN title. And so we feel like, you know, we return four guys that are going to be over 181 speed ratings. So they're gonna be really fast guys. We should have four really talented seniors next year that have already proven themselves in those types of races. So we're going to be pretty tough to beat. And, you know, we've got some good young guys behind to fill in the gaps. So I think 2025 is probably the next time that the question mark of whether or not we have coached them well enough to be able to run up there and do what they need to do is probably going to rear its head. But that's the thing. If we can put ourselves in a role where we're coming into the season number one or number two, historically, we're not really going to give that back much. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do, is just build a program that year in and year out is good. We were third last year in my first year at Harriman on the podium, which was great. This year we won it. Next year I think we're going to be heavy favorites next year. And then going into 2025, the conversations I'm having with all of our ninth and 10th graders right now is, you know, if you guys want to sustain this, then you're going to have to start putting in the level of work that these guys in front of you are doing. And so I'm seeing a change in the mindsets of a lot of ninth and 10th graders right now. And keep in mind, our ninth graders are at the middle school. They're not with us here at the high school. So it's a little bit harder. You get a lot of kids that think, well, I'm still in middle school. I'm not going to go out for track or cross country yet or whatever sport it is. And then all of a sudden they show up as sophomores. They're a year behind and it's like, okay, we got to play catch up with this kid. So it's a little bit different dynamic up here. But like I said, we do have tough kids. They're not really afraid of things. They put their head down and grind, and that works really well with me.
How'd you end up in Harriman? Like, why? I don't know the story. I know you left Great Oak, but why that school? I mean, all of a sudden it's, you pop up and you're at Woodbridge Classic, you know, and you're with a new team and you're doing very, very well. What brought you to that high school?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. You know, one of the main reasons we moved to Utah was my wife's father is getting up there in age and we wanted to be around for him. And so we tried to find a location that would be decently close to where he lives. And so we did that. It's one of those things where I kind of took a year off and was like, I don't think I'm going to coach for a while. And, you know, I've gone year round since 2000 and it's just, you know, it's take a break time. And so I did, and I got a little bored and it was time to start looking for coaching again. And the coach at Riverton High School, they took ninth at NXN this year, was really pushing me to try to look at the Harriman job because it's just cross town from where he's at. It's in the same region and we compete against each other. And he knew there was a lot of potential at that school and really pushed for me to do it. And I was kind of asking him, you know, why would you want me in there with you? Because, you know, I'm going to raise that level. And that's exactly why he wanted me to go to Harriman, because it challenges him to get better and it raises his level. And, you know, lo and behold, he made it to NXN this year. So, you know, there's not a lot of people that want to put themselves in a situation where they bring in a guy that may mean they don't win for a while, you know? And so it's a smart move on his part because it made his team better. We battled many, many times in the last 2 years. And I think his kids have learned and realized that there's a higher level that we need to go to get to that top end level. And so his team looked really good this year and I think it paid off for him too. So I wouldn't be at Harriman if it wasn't for Chase Engelstad. He really pushed me to get over there and I got lucky. We got a cool principal and he was really into bringing me on and having a chance to win.
I love it. Are you teaching too?
Yeah, I'm just your standard run of the mill computer teacher. I have the basic computer classes, so life's pretty good. One of the things, you know, I had the opportunity to kind of barter for a few things, and one of those was a teaching schedule that isn't, you know, 5-6 preps where you don't have any time to actually focus on coaching. So the principal did a great job of making sure I have time to focus on what the other things I have responsibility with.
Oh yeah, you and I both know that, you know, if you're a head coach, you are coaching while you're teaching all day.
Like it's all day. Yeah.
Let me end with a couple of and then more questions. And this is just because, you know, I respect you and I would love to hear your opinion on it. The sport of cross country, like where do you would hope to see it evolve?
That's a good question. I think we have an advantage because, you know, we evolved probably better than most. You know, it's not like you get to see the number one and number two football teams compete for the national title at the end of the season, right? There is no big game that everybody's trying to figure out how these two all-star teams are going to compete against each other. So, you know, I think having Nike Cross Nationals really, it gives us an opportunity to go up there and really decide who the best is. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that probably think American Fork's the best team in the country, but they didn't end up the national champions this year. So, you know, that's the nice thing is if you'd have done it by rankings, we wouldn't have been national champions. And so to have that place to go up and kind of settle things and say, you know, whoever gets this, you guys are the national champions. That's pretty unique for our sport. And another thing that's crazy is you got to beat the other 21 best teams at the same time. Right. It's not like baseball where it's like, okay, it's us versus another team. And if we win that, we go face another team and just one at a time. And we look at strengths and weaknesses of those teams. It's like, you got to be ready for everybody's strengths and everybody's weaknesses all at the same time. And you've got to formulate a strategy that will help you win while looking at those factors. So we were pretty fortunate this year because we knew the best team in the country outside of us was American Fork, and that's what we could focus on. And so, you know, somebody else had an opportunity to sneak in there, but they just didn't pull it off. So it was good for us to be able to really hone in on one team, but it can be tough some years.
You wrote a book and it's on Amazon, Building Championship Cross Country Programs. Why write a book? Like what made you think this is something that you should do in your life?
Well, my wife was always harassing me about doing it. And then Martin Dugard, the great author right down the road from you, actually.
Yep, good friend, Marty and I.
Yeah, Marty's a great guy. He's one of the better authors in the country and you know, was always harassing me about sharing the secrets and, you know, writing a book. And so I went through and wrote the book. And during the pandemic, I had a lot of free time. So, you know, I would try to write a little bit each night and put it together. And I've been starting to work on a new book for athletes instead of coaches. And I think I got about 40% of that done over last summer. And hopefully I'll finish it this summer. It's hard when you get busy, you know, a lot of things going on. But at the end of the day, you know, I tried to write a book that a coach can sit down and maybe list off 10 or 15 things that they can change that will get their program at a higher level. You know, if you're happy with, you know, 30 kids and a light schedule in cross country, then I didn't write that book for you. I wrote it for the ones that want to make it to NXN, for the ones that want to build a championship program. And the cool thing is I get emails from people going, hey, I read your book and this is the first league championship we've ever won. You know, we made some adjustments here or there. Or I think the one for me as a coach, the coolest one is, you know, I always felt this was the thing I should do, but I just needed confirmation and you gave me that confirmation and it's led to a certain number of successes in our program. So, you know, those are the things that I think are the coolest as a writer and as a coach. You know, if you can help people, I think that's the biggest benefit. So hopefully it helps coaches kind of see the level they've got to work at if they want to be a championship level coach.
Well, there you go. It's on Amazon right now. Building championship cross country programs, Doug Soles and coachsoles.com. It's actually a really great website you put together. It's a great place to have a lot of resources and he is sharing all of it. He's that type of guy. I even called him up and said, can I meet you for lunch? And he said, drive on up. And we did, we had lunch and that's just the type of guy he has. So coach, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Anywhere else we can continue to follow you and your success and even be aware that your next book's coming out?
Yeah. I mean, I'm on X and I'm on Instagram. So anybody wants to follow me on there, you can kind of keep an eye on our teams and what we're doing. You can follow our teams at HarrimanXCTrack.com. HarrimanXCTrack.com. And then of course, DougSoles.com. So there's a few different places that you can put in your favorites and just check from time to time. And you'll see some of the different things that we're doing and some of the schedules of meets. You know, we try to put some competitive meets in there for cross country and track. And so we went to Woodbridge this year, we went to Bob Furman. And then last year we went to the Mount Sac relays and had a great time down there. So I'm sure we'll be doing something big. I know we've been talking about maybe the Oregon relays. So we'll see what the spring brings.
Well, I'm hoping to see you at either Arcadia or Mount Sac, maybe the Oregon Twilight Relays. We've been there once before. But yeah. Anyways, I'm excited to hopefully see you in person. But regardless, Coach, we're so thankful for you and congratulations on all your team success. Those kids are pretty remarkable. And, man, it's really fun to watch what happens with a group of young men, like you said, become men. So without further ado, Steve, our CEO of OnTrackAndField.com and RelaysBatons.com, why don't you and your sexy voice take us away and let us know how to get in contact with you and your companies on social media.
Thanks for joining us on this week's On Track and Field podcast with guest Coach Doug Soles. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com. Custom engraved, meat and competition legal relay batons, water bottles and tumblers. Great for team branding, fundraisers, meet awards and coaches gifts. And by OnTrackAndField.com. Cross country and track's one-stop source for everything you need for a successful season. Competition gear, spikes, training equipment, and shoes. OnTrackAndField.com has everything you need, including our new pole vault and high jump landing systems. Designed by jumpers for jumpers. Check them out online or give us a call for a free quote. And make sure to check out our new website, OnTrackRunning.com, your new source for competition and training shoes, featuring Saucony, Brooks, On Running, New Balance, Asics, and Hoka shoes and spikes. OnTrackRunning.com. And make sure to follow us on our socials at OnTrack, the letter N, Field, at OnTrackAndField on Twitter and the Gram,